You're not finished with me.
My chest, sun came up, got no stress. Devil's still mad, I guess, but he still lose. I'm blessed. Flip my phone, no bad news.
Well, good morning, fellas. Good morning. It is so good to see you gathered here. It is always a good morning to gather with men and enjoy some good food. Amen. Normally, we have Robin come up here and introduce our speaker, get us kicked off, but he's wearing his bright orange today, so I was like, okay, I won't do that to you, Robin. I'll let you be anonymous in the back there, but be free to check him out if you want on your way out. Yeah, guys, I'm so excited to have our speaker with us this morning. This year, if you've been, this is your first time to join us, we've shifted our focus to talking about how real men are intentional. That it's something in us that God has called us to be, to not just be passive and kind of react to life as we go through it, but to be intentional, to be focused, to have a direction that God is calling us into, and to be chasing after that with every decision, with every season, every stage of our lives. And so this semester, as we've been unpacking, what are the ways that men can be intentional? What does that look like? One of the big things, the constant themes that we've seen, is our need for community with others. And so our speaker this morning is someone who is very passionate about the difference between just having guy friends and having real, genuine community with men, having a brotherhood with other men who can sharpen you and help you be the man that God is calling you to be in seasons of joy and satisfaction and in the hard seasons with the hard parts of life. So please put your hands together and welcome Dan Collum this morning. Thanks, Dan.
Good morning, guys. So what I'm going to be reading this morning is my testimony that I put together after I went through Celebrate Recovery. We have a Celebrate Recovery ministry here. You see some flyers on the table there. If you would take one, because when we do our questions in the moment, and actually you can refer to it during the testimony, because I'll talk about some of the steps. You'll see how they start at the bottom and work their way up. And if you want to, if I talk about step five, step four, maybe you want to see the things that are referenced there about it. Celebrate Recovery has 12 steps based on 8 principles. This is a program that just helps us because life is full of junk. Life is full of hard times. And even if it's no fault of your own, sometimes those things affect the rest of our lives. And so Celebrate Recovery is there for people who have really big issues and people who are like, well, I don't really feel like I've got giant issues, but there's some things I want to work through, and the whole gamut in between. So today you're going to hear my story, what brought me to Celebrate Recovery, and how God really worked in my life. So we always start off Celebrate Recovery introducing ourselves. So hi, everybody. I'm a grateful believer who struggles with low self-worth and codependency, and my name is Dan. And that's where Celebrate Recovery people say, hey, Dan. You see that on TV, AA meetings and stuff like that, right? Well, we really do that. So everybody responds with, hey, whoever, just introduce themselves. Okay, so my name is Dan. My name. And lots of people have my name. But when people say Dan, and they mean me, there is a meaning behind it, an identity, a person, an impression. And when people who know you hear your name, there's certain characteristics and thoughts that run through their minds, right? Well, several years ago, to me, the name Dan meant a lot of things. And well, that changed throughout the years. So let me kind of trace the history of my name, my identity. As a little redheaded boy, I remember being quite bold and outgoing. I was proud to tell silly stories and be the center of attention. Back then, the name Dan meant happy, and I was. I remember that changing at a really young age, though. I became very, very shy. I actually remember pulling my mom's dress over my head to hide from people who wanted to talk to me. Suddenly, people scared me. Now, I know kids go through phases, but I look back now, and I see I started to change about that time and how people's words and actions would hit me like a sledgehammer. And the damage crushed the joy out of my identity, and my name began to change. I grew up in the country in a Christian family with a loving mom and a dad who's a really good man, and they handed me a legacy of respect and integrity. But I have to admit, I often felt like an outsider in my family. I didn't hunt or play sports, and part of me wanted to, but I never believed I would be any good at them, so I didn't really try. Somewhere in there, it left me feeling unloved and different from my brothers, and my heart blamed me for the loneliness. My name was unimportant. It seemed like all during my childhood, I was inundated with people, kids mostly, telling me how bad I was at this and how dumb I was because of that. The main damage came from my oldest brother. He was an angry kid, and I caught the brunt of much of that rage. Serious verbal and physical abuse seemed constant. I only have one memory of my childhood with him that wasn't tainted with his mean words or torture. Some of it was even sexual abuse. I was trying to learn who I was and hearing him say that I was named worthless over and over, and I believed him. I was a target of school from about second grade on. About then, my grades began to drop. I couldn't read well and had trouble with simple math. Stupid is what I called myself. I couldn't stand being called on in class. I knew I'd probably have the wrong answer anyway, not realizing it was undiagnosed dyslexia. My brother even joined my classmates by telling them once, "No, I don't have a little brother. Dan's my little sister." I spent much of my recess time by myself, watching other kids play and have fun. This is when Dan started taking on the term alone. I didn't know why my brother was so angry, but he wasn't the only predator in my family. It turns out my grandfather was a lifelong serial child molester, and I was one of his three victims when I was 10 years old. I was his victim when I was 10 years old. I suspect there were at least dozens of other boys over the years, and possibly my oldest brother, though he denies it. So one thing I knew, I wasn't safe at my grandparents' house. I wasn't safe at school, and I couldn't even feel safe in my own home. The only place I felt safe was out in the pasture or playing in the creek, all alone, where no one could make fun of me or punch me or touch me. So I learned to be alone and be okay with that. I was safe in my shyness and my fear, and they were my security blanket. With them wrapped around me, no one could get in, you know, because that's when they hurt you, when they get close. So I lived in fear, dread, and cautiousness. I was scared. Now, fear made so much sense to me as a kid that the first time I heard the Bible story of the master who left money or the talents with his servants, I was proud of the one who buried his money. Smart guy, I thought. I thought he'll be the one who did right, and because he did the safe thing. I was shocked when the master and Jesus both were upset with him. His fear sounded reasonable and natural. He did what was safe and still had the money to give back to the master. The others could have lost everything. And I lived my life holding on to everything and at the same time complained that I had nothing. And the irony was completely lost on me. I didn't know how to not be backwards like that. Even before I became a Christian at 11, I believed God's love for me. I never mistrusted him exactly, but I didn't trust his plan was for me to be anything of importance. I would stay insignificant, and that's all I would ever be called, insignificant. I knew something was wrong with me. I knew God wanted to help me and fix me. And in junior high one day, I felt the strong urge to read my Bible, and I stumbled around and felt that God was leading me to James 1. Verse 8 hit me like a ton of bricks. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I was so fixated on what people thought of me, but wanted to serve God, and that day I knew that the two would not work together. I couldn't serve both God and man. I realized that the name Dan stood for broken. but how do I fix this? For years, I looked to sermons and studies that gave great advice. They helped some. God did grow me out of my shyness, but my obsession with what others thought began to change from complete hiding to wearing a very public mask. I gladly switched my name to fake. As my codependency sprouted, I became more reliant on what others thought, since I couldn't find real answers to my pain. I had to fake it because I knew I could never measure up to anyone. Everyone had something better than me. I knew that my name was inadequate. As I searched for the way to fix myself, I did grow in my faith quite a bit. And college held really great, strong years for me. I surrounded myself with other students who longed for intimacy with God. I became a leader. God had definitely been working a miracle in my life, taking me from a reclusive shyness to comfortably acting and singing in front of hundreds of people, even like directing and leading things. And during college, I took it hard when people in my life would leave. Graduating from college is, of course, inevitable, but I felt left behind and added a new dimension to my identity, abandoned. You see, I needed them. I needed them to help me define me, but they kept leaving. I had lots of surface friends because I reacted to abandonment by keeping a safe distance away from people. Then a buddy from college, from my drama ministry, that I directed, and I started getting really close. I began to feel like he was close like a brother. I took a big risk and let him in. I had just graduated and was on staff at our college ministry when one day my closest of brother friend came to me and our ministry director and handed us a list of our sins, threatening to go over our heads and remove us from our positions. Now, this list didn't make sense, but nothing we said could change how he viewed this calling from God. I knew this was the influence of some holier-than-thou other friends that he had, but that didn't matter to him. Our relationship, our friendship was shattered. I was wounded deeply. How could someone I trusted, helped, and held so dear to my heart threaten me so coldly with what he saw as a list of made-up sins? I sank to a new level of hurt, and I learned that my newest attribute was betrayed. The hurt and fear also included girls. I was hurt by a few, had a couple of girlfriends, but my self-loathing would get in the way, and I would give up, even on good relationships. So I was afraid of more rejection. All along, I kept asking the question, but how does that look in my life? Meaning, a study or a sermon told me something like, let God have all your worries and fears. And I wanted to do that. But I never could quite understand how to get past knowing that I needed to do that and knowing how to do that. Do you ever feel like that? All I could see was that after college, my passion for God was waning. I served him with a big part of my heart and passion, but that grew quite weak at times. So several periods of my life were named faithless. I just couldn't stop comparing myself to others and wanting to be someone I wasn't, wanting things I didn't have when the biggest regret of my life happened. I was working on staff at a small church, serving as youth and music minister, and I found myself working long, long hours and really stressed out. Some folks loved everything I did, but I always felt the need to do more and try to keep from being criticized by church members. Well, that's impossible. So I never could find relief. I had to find escape. I would look at racy pictures on my church computer. At the time, I wasn't looking for porn, but these pictures were bad enough. Unbecoming of a church staff member, and lots of people were hurt. Trust in me was lost, and I agreed to leave. I was looking for validation. I felt really unmanly and unworthy, and all this led to the worst time of my life. For years, I punished myself. I named myself betrayer and depression. I left that church, and very soon, in the midst of my deep depression, I found my way to a large church in Arlington. I worked hard on my mask, striving to only let people see what I wanted them to see. But with every conversation, I had lots of continually rolling thoughts. Do they think my clothes look bad? Am I standing right? Did I just make a stupid point? And all kinds of worries constantly turning and churning in my head without any relief. After a few years, I was on staff part-time and managing the church's coffee shop. On Friday nights, I would see people walking in to celebrate recovery. I heard how God was helping them. Marriages were being saved, and I wanted help too, but was thinking that my problems weren't bad enough for a 12-step program. Besides, what would people think? What would they think of me if I went? Our pastor preached about it. CR folks talked about it. I even led our singles group through a book based on Celebrate Recovery. But I still was in denial that I could go, needed to go, should go. Now, that study I led, Life's Healing Choices, suggested using cards to retrain our old bad habits and negative thinking. I immediately knew I needed that. Still reeling from my guilt over how I left the church, I made a card for Psalms 51, 1 through 2. O loving and kind God, have pity on me and take away the awful stain of my transgressions. O wash me. Wash me of my guilt. Let me be pure again. And on the back, I wrote this prayer. Oh God, you show me mercy. Thank you. Your compassion for me is wiping away the stains of my sins. You make me pure again, pure and clean. You remove my guilt and give me freedom and true joy. I carried those angry, hurtful words from my childhood throughout my life. They echoed in my head, they resonated in my heart, and they filled this life and overpowered it. I blamed God so many times, but feeding the lies was my own choice. You see, whether I'm talking about thoughts or addictions, and believe me, thoughts are addictive, whatever you feed the most becomes the strongest. I fed lies, and they grew more muscles than my confidence did. The lies overpowered the identity I was supposed to have, and I starved that. I let junk fill my head and my heart, and for years I blamed God and kept him at arm's length while I showed everyone else how altogether I was, how faithful I was, how I had faith. Oh, I had faith, but not the faith that others thought I had. And I was walking the straight and narrow, but I was just kind of out for a stroll when I should have been running to his wide open arms. I heard Jesus calling for me, but what was the use? Nothing would change. You see, I believed the lie that when things got a little hard, that was the time for me to just give up. The epitome of the self-fulfilling prophecy. The lies stemmed from being overpowered by my brother. When I would fight back to him, it was useless. So I learned to give up. How would my life get better with that habitual train of thought? And that's why I needed to meditate on my cards, to feed and retrain myself with positive, affirming thoughts. These words that God had penned for me thousands of years ago, he knew then I needed them and would be using them to fight off lies and replace them with his truth. They also weakened the fear that I had of getting help. You see, we don't get help when we have more fear of help than we have of the pain we have in our lives. And I had a lot of pain, but even more fear because of my shame. Then, one Friday night, as I ran the coffee shop for those people who went to CR, I heard a lady talk about how it changed her life, saved her marriage, and was so transforming for her. The change she talked about resonated with me, and I made up my mind to give it a try. I wanted that kind of change too. So mid-December 2009, going to my first Celebrate Recovery meeting, I walked through my church and down that hall for probably like the 1,000th time, but it felt like I was walking into a whole new world. I was nervous, excited, worried, hopeful, scared, longing, confused. Having lost my intimate relationship with God, I wanted it back. I knew that my life was not functioning properly. Otherwise, I would already have a real career and probably a family. This had to change. So I left that night with a new name, Hope. In Celebrate Recovery, we kind of track some of our time with these chips. And I took my blue chip, the first one, January 1st, 2010. This chip signified the beginning of my journey, my commitment to work the steps and allow God to change me. The first thing CR did for me was give me some new friends, friends I knew I could trust. I heard others give their testimony, and they grew my hope and desire for change. I took my red chip. It stands for 30 days of working on my recovery. Some of the testimonies had elements of my own story, and they were God's prompting for me to share some of my deep, dark secrets. I earned my green chip, 60 days. Now, for us codependents, it's hard to define relapse, so I just kept tracking the time I was spending working on my recovery. And by this point, I could tell that I was replacing some of the old names with new ones, like healing. I received my white chip, 90 days, and I was so proud that I like stuck it here in the top of my name tag. My name was now dedicated. Somewhere along the way, I happened upon a movie, The Music Within. In it, Art is a genius with cerebral palsy, and with his palsy-slurred speech and uncontrollable movements and grunts, he said something to the effect of, "You know what people like me want? To be seen. When they look at me out there now, you know what they see? Nothing. I'm ignored." I didn't even know why I was crying or why I had to watch that scene over and over. It hurt. It felt good. I felt some release. And it took hours for me to understand what was hitting me so hard. For most of my childhood, I was ignored or scorned. Even as God brought some healing and confidence to my life, I mostly went through life without letting people see the real me. In a crowded room of people, in the middle of a group of my best friends, even as the life of the party, I walked away feeling utterly alone. I was unknown. People saw the person named Dan, but really, they saw nothing. Or at least that's how I felt. Through Celebrate Recovery, God has helped me learn to trust, to share, to be open. I found new friends. I have people who know my secrets, and they still like me. They truly care about me. They support me. They see me. Yellow chip, 6 months, new name, loved. So I learned to share my secrets and didn't find any judgment. I found others I knew I could tell everything to, but I had to develop that courage. My new family gave me encouragement and love that I hadn't really found in a long, long time. God gave me the ability to forgive myself, others, and to forgive him. Oh, this road to recovery is a bumpy path. To work the steps, I had to relive some old, buried hurts. I found some new ones I had been denying. I laughed with my accountability partners and sponsor. I cried some bitter tears. Dan was changing and now meant new. And I finally found the answers to my old nagging question of how does that look in my life? It looks like the 12 steps, the 8 principles that God has graciously given us in the Bible that we have at Celebrate Recovery. Actual steps to follow, a process I could wrap my brain around, a community to be the body of Christ with. More than just Christian jargon or platitudes that never really explain themselves, but real life, actual, legitimate answers. No one, no study, no sermon could have ever given me those answers because I had to work the steps to find out what my unique questions were. The steps helped me dig in and examine my past hurts and mistakes. The workbook asked some hard questions and forced me to realize truths I needed to learn. As I shared those things with these men, I quickly learned to trust. I was leaning into issues I'd brushed away for decades. I heard my friends share their junk because they felt safe. And I learned even more through their stories about what God was doing in my own life. In these moments, I found my unique answers. I used wisdom from my new friends and found the sweet presence of God. He used the fourth step, the inventory, to help me deeply examine and start to let go of my hurts and guilt. I wrote down my sins, the sins committed against me, my anger at God, how these things affected me, what my part was in each situation, and how these things affected my current messed up, stuck in the mud life. It was hard. Digging up these things was hard. But God was creating a beautiful space for me to hurt and to heal. Then step 5, when I shared everything with my sponsor, I felt a huge weight lift. I was growing another new name, Strong. The truth of my Romans 8:1 card started to come to life. There is no condemnation for those who belong to Christ Jesus. I don't have any need to walk around feeling bad about myself. I'm not condemned by God. His love and grace and mercy lift me up. He sees me as pure and holy and righteous because he made me so. I became forgiven. Trust began to grow in my heart. I was comparing myself to others less and less. I wasn't nervous during every conversation, wondering, what are they thinking about me? And I reached out to others and asked for forgiveness. I even got a call from my big brother, and he apologized for being a mean big brother, a moment I thought would never happen. I finished the steps, having found that change I was desperately looking for. God had done a huge work in my life, and in a really short time, I can't even express how thankful and grateful I was feeling. In the years since, I found an actual career as an elementary teacher. I'm blessed with a fantastic wife and have an amazing 8-year-old girl. I finally got unstuck. No, life is not perfect. I still struggle. Just ask my wife. I still get down at times, but I can pull out my cards, worship with my guitar, call my accountability partners, lean on my men from my triad here, and I can lean on the truth that God teaches me and recover much faster. I can see beyond the here and now. I see that this plan for my future, I see that his plan for my future is ahead of me. I'm learning to find peace where I am. I'm much more contented. My only regret is that I didn't start earlier. I could have easily started this healing journey 4 years earlier. If you haven't, I encourage you to start walking the road to recovery today. Don't regret waiting. You see, for years I was afraid to dive deep into the presence of this enormous God we have. And I know I'm not alone. We tend to be happy just kind of wading in because it's scary to completely dive in to him. At times I still feel the fear of being consumed by this awe-inspiring God of ours, scared to get too close to him. Will this drown me if I'm really consumed in his vast ocean of his presence? But I believe that I'm finding through him the real Daniel Arthur Column, that I'm finding the me I'm meant to be, that I'll finally know who Dan is supposed to be. I really believe that I need to discover even more about the me he designed, the one Dan Column that only he can put together. I see now that I must have that. I want that Dan. My friends deserve that Dan. My family needs that Dan. And my precious God longs for that Dan. He longs for that you. How can we deny him that, especially when he has given us so much? He's given me a new identity. When we are touched by the beauty of our God, we are changed. My name is no longer unimportant, worthless, stupid, alone, scared, victim, insignificant, inadequate, abandoned, or faithless. I am a new creation. I've been given a new identity and a new name. Hope, dedicated, reborn, strong, forgiving, joyful, confident, loved by the maker of the universe, servant of the Most High God, cherished by my Lord, joint heirs with Jesus Christ, child of God. I am recovering from low self-worth and codependency, but now my name is Dan. So we put these on the table. Like I said, these are the steps for Celebrate Recovery. And I know I'm not expecting 30 men to go running to Celebrate Recovery this Thursday, although we would love to see that. But I wanted to talk today. This is a church I found very early on. This is a church with a lot of very open men who are very eager and ready to dive deep with each other. And that's one of the things that drew me here. Knowing that Celebrate Recovery was here was a huge draw. Hearing Neil talk about how he went through Celebrate Recovery many years ago in the welcome lunch kind of cinched it for me. This is where we need to be. And so as you look at this sheet, I would like everybody to grab one and grab a pen if you can. We're going to do a little bit of digging in, just a little bit. I don't expect everybody to be sharing their deepest, darkest secrets this morning, but if you are brave enough, maybe you can share a little something. Dane, do you have the sheet with the questions? I don't have. Okay, all right. So take a second right now and go down to step one. At the bottom, the kind of the tan writing on the left is, step one is, we admitted we are powerless over our addictions and compulsive behaviors, that our lives have become unmanageable. What time is it? I gotta make sure I leave on time. Okay. All right, Dane, I think I'm gonna do this first one, and then I probably need to jet, okay? All right, thank you. Take your pen and just for a moment, stop and think about this first question. What's something about my character that I know God's wanting to work on, God's wanting to change? In a word or two, thereby step one, just write that down. I mean, I'm assuming no one here has reached perfection yet. And if you come here often, you know that this is a time where we're going to talk around the table. We're going to pray around the table. So just find kind of like a leader at your table who's going to start. And let's just, I think, go to the left. And let's share just a phrase or two about where you feel like God is trying to work in your life.